throw balls far. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour as we get into all kinds of different football stuff. A little high school basketball at the end of the show. We've got one, two, three, four, five different doubleheaders tonight on the Paragon TV Network. We'll talk about those matchups at the end of the show. College football, we'll hit a bunch of that today. We didn't really have enough time yesterday. Of course, Jim talked a bunch about it, but we'll hit OU, OSU, Texas this morning. Another, maybe not premier blue blood job is open, but a really good job is open with Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente deciding to kind of part ways. So we've got plenty to talk about on the college football gridiron. Also, NFL. You know, it's funny, and Jim even mentioned it yesterday to with us, and that was the Chiefs may have buried them a little bit too early because they are turning it around, at least for 1 week. Man, that offense on Sunday night looked like the Chiefs offense that just scares you to death, and it scared me to death in my fantasy game because I was way ahead of my main man, Jay Manning. But he had Tyreek Hill. And then I kind of checked the score, you know, first quarter, second quarter. And I still have the battle scars of last year when I played you in fantasy football with Tyreek Hill against the Buccaneers. And I'm like about to start texting you talking trash because I'm up like 80 after the morning games. And then the afternoon, Tyreek Hill has 400 yards and 8 touchdowns or whatever it was. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm behind. What just happened? And so, you know, the other night, he had three catches for 17 yards. Two of them were touchdowns. And it's like, really? That's how this is going to go? That's how this is going to go with Tyreek Hill. Why does Tyreek Hill not like me? But, anyhow, I was able to hold off Jay and improve. I was so scared that last night the Rams kicker was going to somehow have one of those 5 field goal games and I would lose. Speaking of the fantasy football, though, I promised Justin Barrick I'd mention this. There was a very, very close game in our league last night that finished up. And Justin and Eddie, wrong again, Eddie,
ooh,
beat Mark Nation by 0.5.
Whoa!
142.6 to 142.1.
That's
literally 5 yards rushing.
I just look at my score. I never really look at others. I just look at results, like who won. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In standings. But I don't look at how the scores went. That's crazy.
142.6 to 142.1.
So it came down the last night, I assume?
Yes. Let's see.
Let's say who was playing for who.
Wrong again, Eddie, which is Justin. Justin and them had the 49er defense.
Well, they started off with a bang.
And then then on the other side,
well, they played pretty good overall.
Mark had Daryl Henderson, the running back, and also George Kittle for San Francisco.
Yeah.
And they needed, and Mark needed 5 more yards for one of the 5 yards. You think about it, in our deal, it's 10 players, mm-hmm. and all the different things could have happened to get 6 yards to win by a 0.1. It was, a holding call on a 10-yard run that wipes out that yardage. It's pretty crazy. Anyway. I promised Justin I would mention and rub it into Mark just a little bit that he got beat by 5 yards, and so that's what we did right here to start the show. Did you win? Hey, you won.
Yeah, I won. When your opponent plays rugs.
You know, Tyler, the good thing about what our man Tyler Harrison's doing is he's just not playing. So when you get to play him, everybody gets the same advantage.
It's like a bye week, but with a win.
Except, you would think that.
I didn't do great with my lineup. I mean, Tom Brady didn't play great. You know who saved, I wouldn't say saved me, but you know who got me over the 100-point mark really was Diggs, Stephon Diggs. He went off.
Oh, yeah. He had a pretty strong performance from your Browns defense there, minus six.
Yeah, minus six, but didn't really matter. Didn't really matter.
I just got a picture. There's Justin.
That's funny. That's funny.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that you know, and here's the problem, because when you it's like losing to the worst team in the league. If you actually lose to Tyler now because he's not playing.
Yeah.
And I almost did last week. And by the way, I've almost scored more points than anybody in the whole thing. But Jonathan Taylor had like 180 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And I was like, oh, my gosh. But anyhow, I promised Justin we'd mention him beating Mark. And we did. I won again. Close game.
I think I figured some things out. I'm on a little bit of a roll. Although I don't think it might be. All for naught. Might be too late. How many more weeks do we have?
A couple.
Okay.
I think week 14 is the playoff. So that means we have, what, three more weeks?
If I can eke out three more wins, I might have a shot. I need help though.
I'm trying to find schedule.
I mean, I'd have to be perfect.
Here's schedule right here. All right, so we're going to be in week 11 this week, then 12. Have I not played you?
We played earlier.
Earlier.
I'm pretty sure we did.
All right, so three more regular season weeks, and then the playoffs are week 14. The last week is week 15 of the schedule. I am 8-2.
You're doing okay.
Yeah, I went from worst to almost first. That was terrible. My team was terrible last year. You know what I found out after playing and watching different people last year? You know what I found out?
What's that?
Running backs are super-duper important, but also they need to be able to catch, unless you have Derrick Henry, because he didn't really catch many. But as much fun as it is to just sit there and watch the point total for Derrick Henry go up, you know what's even more fun?
What's that?
To watch it go up when Christian McCaffrey plays. Thanks, Possum. Once again for that trade. Dude, it's obvious why he goes number one. And it's obvious why it really stinks when he gets hurt. Because it is nuts watching his score. Because the other day, he didn't even score a touchdown. And he got like 30 points. He caught 10 passes.
Oh, okay.
He caught 10 passes for like 70 yards, and he rushed for like 95 or something.
Yeah, rushed 13 carries for 95 yards.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
So that's 15. So he got like 26 or 27 points without even scoring.
That's production.
Oh, my gosh. Throwing a touchdown or two, he's going to get 40.
Yeah, that's production.
If Cam Newton doesn't rob his touchdowns like he did the other day. Good news is I have him on my bench just in case.
He's going to be... Is he a utility guy now?
Cam?
Yeah.
Probably so. But I did read where Matt Rhule is giving him a majority of the first team reps because Darnold is on the IR.
Well, you got to keep him happy.
Well, I think they're going to play him. I mean,
I think it was just too early to put
him in. Yeah, yeah. He signed, what did he sign? Like Wednesday of last week?
Yeah, I see.
And so, you know, he gets the.
Makes sense.
I can just rush it in from the 2-yard line play.
But what if he starts and then they lose 34-10 or something and he's horrible? Well, like, hey, listen, Cam, how about we put you back in that role of.
Yeah, who is P. Walker?
I don't know.
That's who the quarterback was last week. Listen. We all have said it, or I know I have, when we start ranking these teams here in a little bit. P.J. Walker is his name.
P.J.
But, you know, they go out, the Panthers go out to Arizona and just dominate the Cardinals. But here's the truth. We all knew this was going to happen if Kyler Murray got hurt. That team and that franchise is so Kyler Murray dependent that it's just, I mean, yeah, Colt played great the game before. But no one's confusing Colt McCoy with some guy that's going to lead the Cardinals to the Super Bowl. You know, he's a guy that might be able to step in and keep the thing afloat, waiting on Murray to get back. You know, if he can go 2-1 in any three game stretch throughout any season, that's good enough. That's, you know, that's why he's getting paid that type of money, to be quite honest with you, is that he can keep that team going. Now, you've got to go to the Seahawks this week if Murray's not able to play, so we'll see. But, you know, even just the one win against the Niners keeps things where Arizona's still atop the division. So it was really it was an interesting week around the NFL. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. I forgot to add that. 225-9698. You can give us a call, shoot us a text. Anything NFL, college, high school, doesn't matter. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. I mentioned we got some high school hoops. We'll talk about it at the end of the show. So we'll start with the NFL. And, you know, Kansas City, we buried them. It was so funny yesterday, you know, when Jim said, "Golly, maybe the Chiefs aren't dead." I kept thinking about the promo that we probably still have in rotation of Jim coming on and saying, "You know what I know? The Chiefs are done. D-U-N." I thought, oof, we might need to get that out of there.
Don't worry. Yesterday was Monday. <you? laughs>
But
the Jim promos refresh every Monday. Don't worry about that.
And so Kansas City now 6-4 in a division that we thought early on was going to be really, really good. Some of those teams at the top have come back, and now all of a sudden, don't look now, but Kansas City is leading the AFC West, with the Chargers and Raiders suffering some losses that they didn't have at the first of the year. And now I think when we start looking forward to thinking about the AFC is just crazy. Yeah, Tennessee at 8-2, and then everybody else has at least three losses. And basically everybody else has kind of a bad loss on their schedule. I mean, you look at the Bills, they lost to the Jags. The Titans, golly, their losses are Jets and somebody else that's pretty bad. I can't remember the other one. You know, Baltimore lost to Miami this week. And so it's really hard for me to figure out what's going on and who really is good in the AFC. And as things go on, especially if Kansas City continues to kind of build their momentum back up, I may find myself falling back into the trap of, well, somebody's got to beat Kansas City. They're still the AFC champs.
I agree. I don't know if I was ready to bury them as far as being contenders, but the defense is still an issue for me as far as being Super Bowl contenders or even AFC contenders. So playoffs, sure. Deep run in the playoffs, when you start playing teams, you know, that can bring some offensive power to you, like Buffalo. I'll even throw Tennessee in that conversation, maybe even Baltimore. Then I think we'll have – so issues – as far as burying, you know, Mahomes and the dominance that they are, no, I think they have the capability of offensively of exploding on you, absolutely. But the defense is still a liability for me. So am I burying their Super Bowl chances? I'm more comfortable saying that. But as far as their playoff run chances, not really. I think they can maybe make some noise, but you know how it goes in the playoffs. Each week is tougher than the last. So they'll play some teams that are, you know, a little bit more, you know, inclined to slow them down and take advantage of that very shaky defense.
What do you think has made the turn offensively, at least for the Chiefs? Because I know I kind of have my idea, but what do you think has kind of turned that offense around a little bit?
Boy. Maybe taking how to explain this. Going into a game, you know, we have explained what we thought how to slow down that offense, and that was basically take out Hill, right? I mean, just shut him down and make Mahomes force some bad passes, which is kind of what they were doing when they were getting shut down. I think they go in that, okay, they think that they're going to shut him down. You know, we could throw some different wrinkles in there to find him space. stuff like that. So maybe, I guess the simpler answer is they made it a little simpler.
Yeah, I think it's offensive line. I think the offensive line has gelled a little bit. And now, yeah. Now listen, just a week ago they only scored 13 in a win against the Packers. So,
well, okay, let's look at this.
Maybe
though.
Tap the brakes
okay,
a little bit.
You beat the Giants. Okay. You beat them by three. Okay. You beat a Rodgerless Packers. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you beat a coachless Raiders.
Right. Now you get the Cowboys.
And now you get the Cowboys. So let's see if you're really if you're really back or if it's just fool's gold with those three wins I just talked about.
Yeah, the interesting thing though to me is even last year it felt like the Raiders kind of had a little bit of a beat on what they were doing offensively and could do as good a job as anybody slowing them down, and that wasn't the case on Sunday night. Man, they just rolled right through. So we'll see about the Chiefs, but that's all of a sudden, you know, it's funny how that game against Dallas looked like a tough one for the Cowboys to win in Arrowhead. Then it looked like a layup, and now it's back to, oof, it's going to be a tough one to win if you're the Dallas Cowboys. Speaking of the Cowboys, them, Buffalo, Green Bay all bounced back from losses a week ago. Green Bay was understandable, as we just mentioned, at Kansas City without Aaron Rodgers. But the other two, inexplicable, the way the Dallas played against Denver and Buffalo down at Jacksonville getting beat by the Jags. Those two teams, Dallas and Buffalo, just crushed their opponents this week. 43-3 Dallas beat Atlanta. 45-17 Buffalo beat the Jets. After this week, can we just say, it was one of those weeks? Or are there deeper issues that maybe were masked by blowouts against bad teams this week?
I'll say that again. I'm sorry.
Can we just say that a week ago was just like, it's one of those weeks. Played bad, got beat. Or was this week just playing good after a loss against a bad team and there's still some underlying issues for either one of those teams?
I think it's the first. I just think listen, the NFL's tough to win all the time consistently. That's why I bow down to franchises that do it every year and players that do it every year. Tom Brady. Pittsburgh, I mean, they do it every year. You see what I'm saying? But I just think it just happens. I mean, every once in a while you just come out flat and you can't find that rhythm. And I think, what happened to Dallas against Denver. I could tell in the first two, three possessions, like, it isn't there. Something's it's just not clicking. I don't know what it is. They woke up on the wrong side of the bed. The time change, I don't know. I think sometimes that happens. And it's just – that's just how the NFL is. It's not like college football. It's not like high school football where on paper you're going up against a team that has maybe a sub-500 record and then they come up and get you. That, you know, in high school and college, you typically can book it that the better team's going to win. It's not like that in the NFL. There's a reason – I've always seen it like this. There's a reason these guys are pros. If they weren't good enough to be pros, you see what I'm saying? So if you're not playing on your game, it can happen. But I just think it's just one of those
weird weeks,
and they've clearly bounced back and move on. And anyone will tell you, losses like that can actually help a team, you know, kind of wake them up, snap them out of this cloud nine euphoria of winning all these games, especially Dallas when you're told all offseason, maybe you might be good. Who knows? No one knows. Everyone loves to rip on Dallas. But you know, they're probably in that, what I just talked about, on cloud nine. So maybe a loss like that is good. Say, hey, guys, you can't just coast every week thinking that you haven't done anything yet. So it was nice to see them respond the way they did last week or last Sunday.
Looking ahead to this week, I think there's a couple of situations very similar. Tampa Bay went into Washington off a bye. You know, last year when they came off the bye is when they won every game. On route to lifting the Lombardi Trophy. And then last week, go to Washington, get beat 29-19. Brady was pretty rough in the beginning, especially with a couple of picks. Just never could get over the hump against the football team. But you look this week, they've got a really nice situation on Monday night at home with the Giants coming to town. So I think opponent-wise, it's a pretty good break for the Bucs to get kind of back rolling. Now, a couple of other teams that look pretty bad this week for varying reasons, they don't have that same luxury. And I'm talking about Arizona, and I'm talking about Pittsburgh. Arizona without Kyler were blown out by the Panthers. They have to go to Seattle, so that's no easy chore. Pittsburgh inexplicably tied the Lions, who still haven't won a game, but they haven't lost them all now. But they go out to the Chargers, which the Chargers have been struggling a little bit. Seems like a good spot for them to kind of shoot back off if you're Justin Herbert and the Chargers. So a couple of tough ones there, I think, for both Pittsburgh and also Arizona, especially if the Cardinals don't get Kyler back.
Yeah, and if you realize what Dallas has to do in their next three games in the short amount of time they have to do it in, it could be one of those turning points of the season.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, I'm talking about Sunday night at night, right?
No, Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon against Kansas City. Thursday against
Raiders,
Thanksgiving game. And then next Sunday, no. They do have that off?
No, they're there. 25th. I think it's – do they play two Thursdays in a row? No. That'd be a – yeah, they do. They sure do.
Two Thursdays? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. But
Thursday against the Raiders on Thanksgiving, and then the following Thursday down at the Superdome versus the Saints.
Just maybe two out of the three opponents, especially on the road. I mean, that's a tough stretch. Then you get the short time between the Sunday and Thursday game. Those three games right there for Dallas, if they somehow get three wins out of that one, I'd be very impressed.
Yeah, go clear down even the 2 weeks after. So four of the next five are on the road, two of those in the division.
Yeah.
So you go at Chiefs, host Raiders, at Saints, at Washington, at the Giants. Yeah, if you that, 3-2 is acceptable, 4-1 would be fantastic.
Really?
Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With those division games are always so weird, especially on the road. Washington seems like the defense is figuring it out a little bit. They were a huge disappointment at first.
Now that they figured it out, and then you got Chase Young went out, which is unfortunate.
Giants have played better after a terrible start. And I saw Saquon was practicing for the first time in a month yesterday. So, yeah, there's some issues. Let me ask you this. AFC-wise, I mean, it's kind of up and down. NFC, we've seen some weird losses by the best teams. The Rams, even last night, losing to San Francisco. What, who or what can you trust right now, halfway through the season, be it a player, be it a coach, be it a certain unit within a team, a certain team? What are a couple of things that you, in your mind, can trust moving forward?
In the AFC only?
Yeah, no, anywhere.
Oh, anywhere?
Yeah, in the league.
What can I trust? Well, I'll actually go both divisions, what I can trust. In the AFC, it's funny how this is going to tie in. I trust Bill Belichick.
Me too. That's so funny you said that.
I absolutely trust him in New England to the point I almost want to say they're going to win the East. I just have a feeling about it. They seem like they've finally turned that corner away from the Tom Brady era, and now it's Bill Belichick's team. Well, it always has been. And don't look now, but New England is suddenly playing good football again without Tom Brady. And in the NFC – despite the loss, I trust Tom Brady at Tampa Bay. Look what I did. Tampa Bay. I think I trust that when it comes down to the last stretch and getting to the playoffs, he can carry, once again, a team in a deep playoff run, possibly to an NFC championship game and beyond. So it's funny how those two tie in, but yeah. I trust them both. I trust Belichick. I trust Brady.
I'm totally in on the Belichick. And New England's a team that's won four straight, looked really good doing it. It almost feels like they have Tom Brady light with Mac Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar in their styles. And
that's why they drafted.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what they saw.
It was such a fit. It makes so much sense, and that's why they're good year in, year out. Outside of last year, and I think the one thing that we forget is how many of their guys opted out in last season because of COVID. They were, by and large, the highest number of important pieces in the league. I think it was like seven or eight guys that started opted out. And so that's, last year probably not a fair assessment of what New England was going to be. And sure enough, here they are after a slow start, won four straight, and now it's like, man, Brady and Belichick are back, except for it's Jones and Belichick. I trust Bill Belichick. I really do. and I trust Pat Mahomes.
Okay.
I trust Pat Mahomes. I think that offensive line is gelling together as the season moves along. And I think Mahomes is such a talent that he can raise guys up. I just do. NFC-wise, I trust that Green Bay defense. The Green Bay defense has been spectacular over the last month or so. Man, yeah. They've been good. And so, you know, looking in the NFC, I think I can trust that defense. I think it's going to be vitally important for teams like Arizona, Dallas, Tampa to figure out a way. Arizona already had their shot at Green Bay and lost. Dallas doesn't get that shot. But you're with that defense playing that way, and Tampa doesn't play Green Bay either. So the last place you're going to want to go is Lambeau on it for an NFC title game.
Right.
You know, to face off, you know, there anyway with Rodgers. But in the cold, in the winter weather in Green Bay with a defense that's been playing that good, it's just going to be hard to score points up there against them. So I think that's, you know, one of the things to look for as we move along with those records and the chase to be the only team that gets the bye, but then also the home field advantage and all of that. And then I think I trust the Dallas offense.
Really?
Even
after last week?
The Denver game was the Denver game.
They got your trust back after one game.
Yeah, I think it's just an anomaly. I think that Prescott had a bad game, and everybody kind of followed suit. But that offensive line is one of the better ones in the league when they're all there and they got guys in the right spots. And there's just so many playmakers, and Prescott's been fantastic outside of the one afternoon there against Denver. So I think I trust Dallas's offense as much as anything else in the NFC. All right, your top five.
My top five, I'll go with Green Bay. You mentioned their defense. They really impressed me. And, you know, we talk about turning corners and not burying teams. You know, there's some grumbles about Green Bay. But, listen, when Rodgers is there and he's good, and then that defense is playing the way they're playing, best team in the NFC and best team in the NFL right now for me, Green Bay. Number two, I'm back with you with Dallas. Because of how other teams performed, but the offense was mightily impressive Sunday. The defense, the offense kind of outshadowed what the defense did, but they have three takeaways. I mean, it was a complete game all the way. They had to block punt. So I like Dallas and their bounce back. I got them at number two, mainly because the offense is so dynamic. I think it might be the best offense in the league right now. Buffalo, I have number three. Tennessee 4, just out of respect because they're still winning without Derrick Henry. And then Kansas City creeps back into my top five. I'll round it up with top five, Kansas City. But, I mean, if I went to six, it would be Tampa Bay. They drop out with that loss to Washington. So, there's my top five.
Yeah, it's hard to put the Cardinals in there because of you know, with Kyler, they're probably there.
Yeah,
without them, they're not.
They drop like a rock for me.
That's right. I'm going to go with Tennessee just at one. I don't know if I believe that, but – man, they've the gauntlet that they've run over the past few weeks without Henry. You know, that's golly, look what they beat the Bills, they beat the Chiefs, they won at the Colts, they won at the Rams, and then they beat the Saints. I mean, that's a heck of a 5-game run. So I'm gonna have Tennessee 1, Green Bay 2, Dallas 3. I think I've got the Bills 4, and it's funny you put Kansas City back up in there because I was thinking the same thing myself. The way that they looked against the Raiders. You know, maybe trying to be ahead of the curve. You know what I'm saying? And I think if I had somebody else with the way they're playing, it would be New England. Man, New England looks good right now. You know, the Rams and the Bucks kind of faltering out a little bit. Baltimore as well with bad losses this week. Bottom three.
Detroit, listen, you tried, but you're still winless. You haven't lost all the games, but you haven't won any. So I got Detroit there. Houston on an 8-game skid, one win of the year. They're a train wreck, and I was torn between the Jets and the Jags. The Jets seem like they have a little more life than the Jags, and the Jags have really, even in their wins, they haven't really impressed me. So that's what I got, Detroit, Houston, and the Jaguars.
I've got Houston. I've got the Jets. Man, poor Lions. You can't not put them down there.
Sorry, I mean that zero is.
But they,
yeah.
I mean, it feels like they're better than some teams, even though they haven't got the wins. But you have to have them back down in there in the bottom three.
Yeah.
So it's fun NFL. It's what the AFC is. What makes the NFL so fun? because it's just a jumbled mess of pretty good teams. There's so much parity. And then in the NFC,
there's a lot of good teams.
There's a lot of really, really good teams, but they all seem to have a little bit of a flaw also.
Right.
So it's hard to kind of really get behind a team because next week we'll be in here dropping them out of the top five. Just a few days away. Still got plenty of time to research and get ready for your Western Oklahoma Realty picks this week. Take a look at the leaderboard. I did better this week with 6 of 10. It helps to pick all the games.
That does help.
It helps to pick them all, and I was able to pick them all 6 out of 10, kind of getting out of a little bit of a funk. Really should have been two in a row for 6 of 10, but unfortunately I forgot to pick.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
That's right. We've got a tie at the top with J.P. Howell and Johnny Rep. Possum, third. Andy Peffer, third. 10 games above 500 for those guys. 14 above 500 for the top two. It's pretty good picking. You're one game ahead of me.
Yeah, saw that.
Oh, see, that's why my total is different, because I didn't pick those three. I took losses, but I didn't pick them, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
Anyhow, Western Oklahoma Realty, people before property. There's Tyler, one win behind me. It's hard to go 4-10 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, that's what he did. Two in a row, 4-10. Anyhow, Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, all the gang at Western Oklahoma Realty, people before property. They can help you with all your real estate needs down there, 3rd Street here in Elk City. Just a couple of weeks left. What, 3 weeks left before we crown a champ? Two regular seasons and then the conference title games. Speaking of the conference title games, looks like we're down to a three-horse race in the Big 12 to see who will be down in Arlington at Jerry World with two games remaining. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State still kind of in the driver's seat, but with those two playing each other, an Oklahoma State win would make it vitally important for OU that Baylor lose either this week against Kansas State or next week against Texas Tech. If Bedlam doesn't go Oklahoma's way, or quite frankly, if Iowa State doesn't go Oklahoma's way. Let's talk a little bit about, we kind of got into it, and then Jim kind of gave us his thoughts.
Before we go ahead,
yes.
But question. If,
go ahead.
So scenario-wise, just so I'm hearing this right, if OU wins this weekend and, say, Baylor loses, OU gets in?
If OU and OSU both win this week.
Despite Bedlam outcome?
Yes. If OU and OSU both win this week and Baylor loses, we're going to have two Bedlams in a row.
We already have it locked in.
Yes. Okay. Yes. If not, then things could get wonky. Actually, I think Oklahoma State, if Oklahoma State wins this week, they are in. Period. End of story. Because they will, what was the deal? Maybe Baylor has to lose too. So Baylor's got two losses. OSU would have one. OU would have one if they win. But if OSU wins Bedlam, Baylor wins out, then the tiebreak is the head-to-head win for Baylor over Oklahoma. That's what it is. If Oklahoma State wins, at worst, they can be in a tie with Baylor.
And
they would get the tiebreaker because they won. That's right. So if they win this week, they are in. Oklahoma, not the case, unless Baylor loses.
Now, if you're a fan of the state of Oklahoma, isn't that the scenario you want after this weekend? Wouldn't you love to know, hey, it's a Bedlam Big 12 championship game?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that just be awesome to own the Big 12, the state of Oklahoma just own the Big 12?
Yeah, it would
knowing
be.
that trophy is going to go to Norman or Stillwater? That's fun to me. That's fun. Meanwhile, Kansas is beating Texas, and that's just fun to me.
Yeah,
to be the two teams from the state of Oklahoma representing a conference. That is very rare and very cool to me.
So
that's what I'm rooting for this weekend.
If all those things happen, I will be up here furiously going back through shows in early September to find the sound when we predicted the Big 12 title game.
Well, I think we had one side of it right, but the other side.
I had it right.
Who did you pick, Bedlam?
Yes.
You did?
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to find the sound to prove it if that happens.
Okay, you do that Sunday afternoon.
I'll have to be up here anyway since we're leaving tomorrow to get to Grove.
Jeez.
Anyhow, yeah, that was my pick for the Big 12 title game was Bedlam.
Well, once.
Hey, here's what would be ironic. Here's what would be ironic is if I'm wrong because OU can't get there.
That would be weird. That would be ironic, yeah.
Which is very possible at the moment. Yeah. Let's go back. Let's talk about Oklahoma after the loss to Baylor. It felt like an inevitable loss to a lot of people. That's why I don't think, you know, yesterday, if you listened in the afternoon, you didn't hear very much vitriol from the fans like you do normally when Jim tells them what they don't want to hear. Normally they'll call in and argue with him. You didn't hear much of that.
Yeah.
Because I think Oklahoma fans were kind of resigned to the fact that it was coming. Weren't sure when, weren't sure how.
Yeah.
But it was coming. And then it just happened to happen in Waco, Texas on Saturday in a 27-14 loss.
Reminds me of high school in a class where I would barely get by. You know, like, okay, I got a C on that test.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, a C minus on that test. Oh, and then I got a pop quiz, and then, well, there's my F.
Yeah, forgot to read the story. Oops.
I knew that was coming.
That's what it felt like. Yeah. You know, Oklahoma just hasn't been as good as what anybody thought they were going to be going into the season. And that's not just people around here. It was nationally people thought that this was going to be one of those years for OU because – defensively, they were much improved last year. A lot of the same guys were back. It just hasn't happened. And then the offense cratered down in Waco. Dave Aranda, give him tons of credit. When you look at the last three seasons, the lowest output for Oklahoma's offense each and every year has been against a Dave Aranda coach defense. LSU in the playoff game last year against Baylor, this year against Baylor. 260 yards of total offense for OU. Is the lowest in a long time there in Norman. And then, of course, the defense, you know, it's funny because it felt like they played pretty good, but they also gave up 300 yards rushing. I think they just gave out because the offense couldn't sustain any drives and couldn't keep them off the field. And then finally Baylor, you know, hit a crease with a run, a 75-yard run from Abram Smith, and then all of a sudden it was 17-7. It's funny because at 17-7, with the Hail Mary that Riley was throwing up with Spencer Rattler in the game instead of Caleb Williams, it felt like 10 points was insurmountable of a lead, and that's not something that normally you feel with OU's offense, but it was that way in Waco on Saturday once Oklahoma got behind by two scores, and it was talked about ad nauseum yesterday as soon as Al got on the air. When you look back at that 75-yard run, I noticed one thing right off the top. And that was Shane Whittier was in the game and Brian Asamoah wasn't.
Right.
And it's just that to me is so ridiculous in a 3-point game in the fourth quarter for your starting linebacker not to be in the game. And it wasn't because he was hurt. It was just because, oh, it's time to rotate. I mean, do you really think Malcolm Rodriguez at OSU is out of the game on the most important drive of the game?
Right.
At the linebacker spot, absolutely if he's not dinged not. Up or anything like
no,
that.
Absolutely.
I mean, what is going on? It doesn't make any sense to see this. And I get people rotate D linemen in and out. Everybody does that. Mm-hmm. And for good reason. Those guys are huge. They're on the field a bunch of plays. They need to be as fresh as possible. But a linebacker who, by the way, Asamoah played the best game he's ever played in the Crimson and Cream.
Yeah.
And he wasn't out there on the most important series of what turned out to be the game. And sure enough, Abram Smith busts the run. Bohannon runs it in for a touchdown, and Baylor's up two scores. I don't understand that philosophy of does it go back to recruiting when you're telling guys, hey, you're going to play early. Hey, you're going to get to play. Are you guaranteeing guys playing time to get them to sign? Like, what is going on? Because it makes zero sense when you watch that game for 24 in white not to be out there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a philosophy thing, and I can't put my finger on it of what that philosophy is, and clearly that's what's got to change. And I see on here, is it deep-rooted problems, you know, internally? I don't know. Maybe the marriage of Grinch and Riley isn't as maybe the honeymoon's over, and it's just not gelling the way it looked like early, especially last season too. You know, even as soon as last season. But I don't know, but you know, and then I know we got questions we'll answer here, but you know, can it be fixed this season? You know, Riley has always had a great reputation of bouncing back and rallying the troops after a loss, but this feels different to me. Doesn't it?
Well, they're not fixing the problem with OU football this season. Because you can't just, in a couple of games, make them not be soft.
Right.
And quite honestly, I think it's going to take the head coach an off-season of reflection to be able to put his finger on what's the problem with the team, if he can. I don't know if he can. I mean, I make the joke about Texas Tech East, but that's what this looks like. It's a soft football team, and it has been.
Yep.
The only problem was you didn't notice it as much when the otherworldly quarterback play was going on with Baker and with Kyler, and even Jalen Hurts masked so many of those issues. But the defense hasn't been any good since 2009. This is nothing new. I mean, it was nothing new even at the end of Stoops' reign. But it feels like it's a softer team than it's ever been. And we talked about it yesterday. You mentioned Riley wanting to be their friend instead of their coach and be the player's coach. At some point, somebody's going to have to step up and change that idea. And it has to be him. It starts with him.
Absolutely.
The things that are going on. I mean, Andrew Rame shoving somebody down for no reason after an extra point when you're down 24-14 with 2 minutes left is idiotic. And you should be in trouble for that. You know, Winfrey, on the first drive of the third quarter, the only reason they mentioned his name all game long is because he got a stupid penalty taunting the sideline. It was about to be 3rd and 13. Instead, it's 1st and 10, and they go kick a field goal. Baylor does. You know, roughing the snapper. I don't even know what that is. But I know it's dumb because the only way OU had – I mean, it was almost literally zero chance, but – at 27-14 with two more minutes left, at least you have the ball and control a little bit of what's happening. Instead, you shove the center over, get a penalty, and then everything happens at the end, which we didn't get much of a chance to talk about. And, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, people talking about it. Listen, that had nothing – what the explosion on the field from Riley – had zero to do with any field goal. That's not what that was about at all. He wasn't whining about Baylor kicking a field goal. He was mad because 5,000 fans rushed the field with 3 seconds left and they didn't throw a flag. That's what he was mad about.
Yeah.
And for good reason, by the way. When you think of some of the calls that get made on a weekly basis in college football about taunting and different things like that, and then 5,000 fans run on the field and it's not 15 yards, I understand why he's upset. And he also had the player's safety in mind going, listen, the game is over. Shut it down. That way I don't have to get my guys back out here to have to get ran through again. It's already happened once. Enough is enough. Just the game is over. And if Dave wants to kick a field goal, let him kick a field goal with none of us out here. We're done. But apparently that's not the procedural way for it to happen. So then you got to go through the dog and pony show of getting 15 or 11 guys back out there just to run back off the field. It was ridiculous, and I understand why he was mad. And he's also clearly frustrated with the way his team played all at the same time wrapped into one. But anyone acting like he was whining about a field goal at that time, at the end of that game, that's not what was happening at all. End of story. So, you know, you just see that, oh, my gosh, can't believe he's whining about Baylor kicking a field. He wasn't at that time. It was all about 5,000 fans on the field. And there was plenty more coming when they finally got everybody to figure out, hey, wait a minute, there's 3 seconds left and all that.
What is there a – I know the SEC has it. Are there
I don't think so. I think it's just an SEC thing with the fines for rushing the field.
And there will be no – reprimand or anything like that because
no,
let's face it, Bob Bowlesby doesn't like OU right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, that I one of the coolest things about those big upsets, and you know, if I'm Baylor, I don't do that because you belong more than that. But one of the coolest things about some of those upsets is the fans rushing the field.
Well, sure.
You know, in one of those big time upsets, you know, Purdue beating Michigan State, fire out there. You know,
but here's the deal,
whatever,
Aaron. We were going into that just like we started this topic with Everybody had a feeling this was coming.
Well, even the president of Baylor said, yeah, we're going to rush the field before the game ever started. But that's how soft OU's program is. People can take shots. Think about somebody saying that to Alabama. It ain't going to happen. You'd be afraid that Saban would hear about it and pound you in the face for it.
Very true.
During the game. Nobody's scared of OU. Fourth down. They're not going to stop us.
Right.
Give me a break. You know? I mean, it's just the perception around.
Why is everyone scared to ask Lincoln Riley to bring this up to Lincoln Riley during his pressers?
God, because they're scared to death, they're not going to get to go.
That's what.
If you ask hard questions.
Someone asked me after the game, Jared, if you're in the press room, what would you ask him? And I just laid out a series of questions. And someone said, would you really ask him that? I was like, it would probably be my only time allowed in that room.
I think that's a lot of it.
No one's asking the questions about the softness and the preparation or lack thereof and all that stuff. No one's asking those questions. They're just, anyways.
It's just this close.
Yeah, if I have to hear that one more time from Lincoln,
I don't think it's happening.
I will break something.
I don't think it's happening today.
Well, I couldn't believe he said it again.
I don't think it's happening today.
He said it after the game Saturday.
Oh, dear.
We're close.
Yeah, not really.
No, you're not. You should have been close in September, Lincoln.
Close to what?
Close to a four-game losing streak. That's what you're closer to.
Close to not winning the conference, I can tell you that. Oklahoma State's close to doing it. Man, they have been awesome the last couple of weeks, trouncing teams that Oklahoma has just barely squeaked by. I think that's another contrast when you look, because they played Kansas back-to-back weeks, right? They played TCU within the couple of weeks there together, and you see what OU did to squeak by in those games, and you see the way that OSU has just pounded some of these teams. How much faith? It's funny because I was talking to an OSU fan during the game on Saturday, and it's like, OSU fans, how much faith do you have in that defense? How much do you got? I mean, you're starting – it's nationally, people are starting to wake up to the fact that this is one of the best defenses – behind Georgia, obviously, in the country. Now, how much does that have to do with poor quarterback play in this conference versus years past? I don't know. But I do know this. When you compare what teams score against everybody else versus what they score against OSU, it is drastically smaller. So, you know, just they're holding almost everybody to their season low in points throughout this last little run and really the whole season. So how much, OSU fans, I want to hear from y'all. How much trust do you really have in that defense? Because it's such a weird feeling. It's got to be such a weird feeling. I mean, it hasn't happened in OU in forever. I don't know what we would be doing if waiting for the other shoe to drop? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been a great run, but, okay, when's the dud?
Right. I'm not popping confetti until the games are over.
That's right.
I'm not celebrating early. Go, okay, look at us. We got a defense. Hey, let's go for that championship. And then all of a sudden, boom, dud.
Because you're just used to it happening.
And I really think that's how OSU fans are approaching it, too.
The one I was talking to is kind of like that.
I can't speak for OSU fans, but I'm just going from how we feel about the OU defense. If we were in their shoes, that's how I'd feel. I was like, listen, I'm not going to believe it until I see it. I'm not going to believe it until every game is done and statistically they're one of the best at the end of the year.
But at what point, I mean, how many games you got to see? It's 10.
I understand that.
It's already 10.
I understand that, but I guarantee you OSU fans are saying, we've seen this before.
We've seen
flashes of this where we think, hey, you know what? This might be the year. And then something happens.
And then in
the back of their mind, let's face it, they won't say it.
Oh, yeah, they will.
About Bedlam?
Yep.
Like, hey. It's kind of like Bedlam, that same approach. We're not going to believe we beat them until the game's over, you know? Because I said it yesterday. What year was it? 15, 14? Cold as hell in Stillwater.
13.
13, they went in, and it looked like all OSU had to do was beat a porous OU team to claim a Big 12 title, and then look what OU does.
Yeah, but that's
what I'm saying.
You're talking team, though. The Oklahoma State hasn't had a defense specifically like this.
Yeah.
They've had offenses, but not necessarily defenses. And the one thing about that, the difference to me is you're never out of a game when you have that defense.
Very true.
It'll be interesting to see how Gundy plays that game, though, because you wouldn't blame him for just status quoing.
He's got to get past his own personal demons in that game.
Wouldn't blame him for doing what he's doing because it's working. Having said that, with the history of this game, of the Bedlam game, that is the one thing that's kind of the fly in the ointment for sure, is the way that his teams have performed in the Bedlam game. It hasn't been very good.
Right.
I mean, he's won, 2-13 against the Sooners, and one of those is because Bob Stoops had a senior moment and punted it to Tyreek Hill again.
Yes.
So, it is interesting,
though.
He gave
the blueprint for the rest of the country from this point on, even the NFL. Don't repunt it. Don't give it to Tyreek Hill if
you
don't
do.
Have to.
Whatever you do. Don't do it. It's going to be interesting.
That's
Oklahoma
Bob
State.
Stoops' contribution.
Listen now, Oklahoma State. It is a mega trap game coming up Saturday out in Lubbock.
Is it?
Yes. The look ahead.
We'll look ahead at it later, but I'm not buying into it.
Question on the text: if they hold OU to the lowest total, it might be a shutout. What are the chances of them shutting OU out? I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't. Talk about a wild one would be neither one of the teams in Bedlam not scoring a point. That wouldn't have even seemed fathomable at any point in the last decade or decade and a half with the way the offenses have been for both OU and OSU. But I will say this, we haven't seen a defense at either school anywhere close to what we're seeing from OSU this year. The Cowboy defense is phenomenal. And there's no other way to say it, but that's a really, really good defense. And I'm not of the belief. I mean, I know the history of Bedlam, obviously. It's one-sided for sure. Having said that, none of those guys that played in the game past are going to show up on the field for OU. They're just not. It's this team this year. And looking at the way that this season has gone for both of those schools, Oklahoma State is better than Oklahoma. And I think that's hard for people to say because you're not used to saying it because it hasn't been the case very often. But at least right now, you know, on the 16th of November, Oklahoma State's a better team than Oklahoma. And I think when the line comes out, that will be portrayed by the guys out in the desert, which doesn't happen very often either. So it's going to be a really interesting week this week, though. I think that game at Texas Tech for OSU, it has the ability to be a trap game. I do think that with Tech beating Iowa State last week, that helps kind of get the Cowboys focused on what's this week and not looking ahead to what's coming up next week with the regular season finale at home. And what, quite frankly, could be the last time you see that OU helmet on the field at Boone Pickens Stadium in a long time. With the impending move to the SEC, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's next year, but the game will be in Norman next year. So this could be the final Bedlam in Stillwater for a while. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens this week and if we do get two Bedlams in a row, if we know we're going to get two Bedlams in a row, would be even cooler. As Jared was talking about earlier today, that would be really nice to know going into Bedlam that, hey, we're going to get two shots at this. It'd be cool. And guarantee that Big 12 trophy is coming back up to Oklahoma, either in Stillwater or in Norman. High school hoops tonight on ParagonTV.com. Canute's at Sweetwater. Hammond's at Arapahoe Butler. Cheyenne Raiden goes to Hydro Eakley. You've got Leedy at Sentinel. You've got Olesti at Eric. All five of those are girls and boys doubleheaders, all five with a 6:15 pregame, a 6:30 tip in each of those doubleheaders, girls first, boys second. They're on ParagonTV.com tonight, high school hoops, back on the floor. All right, everybody have a good Tuesday. It's going to be warm, up in the 80s, windy, and then all of a sudden when you wake up in the morning, it's going to be back down like it's winter again in the 40s. But only in Oklahoma could you have a 40-mile-an-hour south wind during the day and a 40-mile-an-hour north wind at night. But that's what's going to happen tonight. Everybody have a great Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!